since we're talking about religion, I suppose I should start by telling you that I was raised as a Presbyterian. My father taught Sunday school, my mother sang in the choir. In high school, I joined the Unity School of Christianity, and in medical school, I became a Quaker. After I graduated from medical school, my mother went to divinity school and is now a minister of the United Church of Christ. So I've had an interest in this in my family for a long time, but it's also very relevant to my career in medicine. Many people go into medicine thinking that it's going to be a scientific career, and in part that's true, but it's also true that medicine is an art that involves human beings interacting with each other. And in fact, we can't do medicine unless we make connections with other people. And that involves trust, respect, and communication. If we don't understand the person and the culture from which they come, we are really impaired in our ability to deliver and provide comprehensive care. So in my formal medical education, I learned a few things to be wary of in terms of religion. And some of you may have heard some of these things as well. The first thing I heard was that be wary of Jehovah's Witnesses. They won't take blood transfusions, and therefore you can't do surgery on them. They're just a bunch of trouble. So of course, when I became a pediatric resident, we had a child who was in that faith and needed surgery and needed a blood transfusion, and you know what, everything worked out fine. So it's good to have some information to anticipate problems and have strategies, but things aren't always as dire as they appear. Other things that we learned were that the Amish don't immunize their children, and that's why there's a lot of pertussis outbreaks among the Amish. That there are often pertussis outbreaks among the Amish, but it's also true that an increasing number of Amish families do immunize their children. I was also told that Christian Scientists never seek medical care because they don't believe in it. They believe that God will heal everything with prayer, and that's sometimes true. And I've seen that happen with friends and colleagues, but I've also seen a child in the hospital whose family were very strong Christian Scientists in Boston, and they were very relieved to have a physician talk with them in a respectful way and not blame them for delays in seeking medical care. So I want to share with you a couple of experiences I had that people hadn't warned me about and mistakes I made because of my ignorance about religion and culture. And this happened when I finished my residency and finished my fellowship at Yale, and I went out to Seattle for my first job, and I was directing the pediatric clinic at the county hospital where there were children, families of refugees from all over the world. And being a good pediatrician, I would compliment the children on, you know, what a beautiful child you have, aren't her eyes beautiful, isn't she smart? And I could see the moms were not always thrilled with this. In fact, they kind of started to back up a little bit. And so I asked the interpreter, why is it that some of the moms seem uncomfortable when I compliment their children? And I was told that in some families and some cultures, there's a belief in the evil eye, and if you compliment somebody too much, that may be putting their child at risk. And so I learned that with certain people of certain faith or spiritual perspective, that compliments were not a good idea. That was completely new to me. Another thing that pediatricians do is we pat children on the head. This is not a good idea for Hmong children because the head is sacred in a lot of Southeast Asian cultures, and it's sort of an affront to touch somebody on the head. So these were things I learned by my mistakes, and things that I assumed were normal, things were not normal in every culture, and it helps us see our own culture, I think, more clearly. Of course, working in pediatrics, I saw the Bible invoked in ways that I hadn't anticipated. Children with child abuse whose parents said, well, they learned about spare the rod, and so the children were beaten to within an inch of their lives, and sometimes beyond that. I went to a Navajo reservation to visit a friend of mine and with a colleague who's an obstetrician, and we were talking about the differences in their hospital. They actually had a special area where the Navajo medicine men would come in and do things and do ceremonies in the hospital because it was so important for families of that culture. It was also important for many families not to talk about death, so when we were doing discussions about do not resuscitate orders, it was a very uncomfortable conversation because in that culture, in that spiritual tradition, you don't talk about death. It sort of invites ghosts and unpleasant things to come into the room, and it's a fearful topic. And so DNR conversations are very different in that culture. More recently, I think professionally, it's important also. We work with colleagues who are from diverse cultures, and so it's always appreciated when the Jewish physicians offer to take call on Christmas for the Christian physicians. And I think it's only fair for us to recognize what may be important holidays for them to spend with their family, whether it's Passover or Yom Kippur, and reciprocate. But surprisingly, that's not often done. There's often a rotation for Christmas. There's no rotation for Yom Kippur or Passover. So this is an area I think we could use more literacy and more respect for one another in our work environments. This came up this summer for me. I'm in a part of a research group, and one of my new colleagues is Muslim. And I got to meet his wife, and his family came over for dinner, and I noticed at the restaurant they ordered vegetarian. I said, oh, I didn't know Muslims were vegetarian. And he said, we're not, but I can't be sure that the meat that's served in the restaurant is halal. So when I go out to eat, I don't order meat. So this was another learning opportunity for me. And it reminded me to be sensitive to asking him, when was Ramadan? Because we wanted to have a party for the research team, and we didn't want to have a party with like barbecue and stuff like that during the day on like a Sunday afternoon during the middle of Ramadan when he couldn't feel comfortable participating in that. So I think as we work in an increasingly diverse setting, it's important for our patients. Also, I had a great conversation with him where I learned a lot about what age his kids started to observe the fast. He had a son who was 9 and a daughter who was 14, so they were starting to do fasting for various parts of the day during Ramadan. But also, many observant families do not only not take food, but don't take oral medications during Ramadan. So you can imagine how that would affect diseases like diabetes and any medication that you have to take more than before dawn or after sunset in your course of daily life. So I think as our lives become more complex and more diverse, it just helps for us to understand the culture and values of the people around us, whether we work with them or we serve them in our profession.